So that concludes the official part of the conversation, and now it's your turn, if you like, to come to a microphone and ask a brief question. And so if you want to come up, make sure that it's a question that you have and not a speech, and the question is brief.
Are they going to address it to one of us?
And you address it specifically to one or another. And I see we have someone here, so go right ahead.
Actually, I was hoping to hear from both of you, and I had two really quick ones. One is, what do both of you have to say about the speculation that the followers of Jesus moved the body and hid it in order to sort of keep the movement going? And the other is, does Jesus' divinity depend on the resurrection? If you have no resurrection, do you have no divinity? Are they dependent? And that was my question.
Okay, couple questions, couple responses. The first question, what about the disciples doing something to make a claim? The theory that the disciples may have stolen the body to perpetrate their claim is a theory which in the history of responses to the resurrection has basically not been held by virtually any major critical scholar since Hermann Reimarus, a German rationalist, did it in the 1760s. There's a reason. If critics are not holding this theory and have it, there's a reason they have it. And there's a lot of responses to this, but the long and the short of is this. When somebody dies for something, no matter what it is, it could be an atheist dying for communism. It could be a cultist believing a UFO or I don't even know if cult is, I don't even know what words describe all this. But people have a lot of beliefs that other people think are cultic. And you might think what I hold is. But if somebody is willing to die for their faith, you don't say, oh, they perpetrated a fraud. Let's say they went ahead and died. You don't say they perpetrated a fraud. You'd say, wow, that was a very brave person who must have really believed what they said. Now, Tony will quickly point out believing something doesn't make it true, and that's correct. But here's the point. If the disciples died for what they believed, and we have ample evidence of that, we can talk about it if you want, from early history. But if the disciples died for what they believed, then they at least believed it. So to say they stole the body and then really believed it seems to be a huge problem. Plus you've got James and Paul who are, how do you get James and Paul involved in this plot? So there's a lot of other issues. Deity. The question was, could you have deity without a resurrection? Is that right? Yes, if that's what he's claiming. I mean, if his claim is I'm deity, take it or leave it, or I'm deity and I'll heal this person's leg or something, you'll have to take that on its own grounds and see. But that could work. What I'm saying is the evidential value would be a lot lower, and that's not what Jesus claimed. Jesus said, I'm deity, and I'll show it by being raised from the dead. So now he's making the ultimate claim, and it's a stand or fall kind of view. I think that's where Paul says, if Christ has been raised, our faith, we have our faith. Otherwise, our faith is in vain. I think that's the point there.
Did you want to respond? Because she addressed the question to both of you. Did you have anything that you...
No, I didn't. No, I think this is...
I hope the question is not too disappointing. But you
no, I think you've said is perfectly satisfying.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
So ditto from Professor Cleveland.
Ditto.
Go ahead, sir.
This one is for Dr. Habermas. Is that, am I pronouncing it right? You were saying that Paul received an outside source as one of your discussion topics. Was this one of the sources you were talking about outside of the Bible, possibly, that was verified?
He doesn't say, but he says that himself. Those are Paul's words. Paul said, I gave you what I was given. He said, I delivered unto you that which I also received. How Jesus died for our sins according to the Scriptures, was buried, rose again the third day, and appeared. And then that list of appearances comes. That group of verses right there is not Pauline. It's a piece of material that he took from somebody else and put into his book. Of course, he tells you that. I gave you what I was given. And so by far the most typical critical position is he received that material while he was in Jerusalem at what we might say plus five years after the cross.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any information?
That's his testimony.
Have any information about that source that he received the information?
Oh, well, there are sources outside the New Testament that say Jesus was raised from the dead or the disciples believed he was raised from the dead. But actually, if you talk to a critic, like, say, Michael Martin or G.A. Wells, if you talk to people who are way over on the left by their own admittance, they're going to tell you, strangely enough, this will surprise a lot of people. My students don't get this for a long time. They will tell you the best evidence for the best evidence for the resurrection is in the New Testament. There are extra-biblical material, but they have to deal with the data that Paul claims he got 5 years later, and they will tell you that Paul is an eyewitness. Michael Martin says that. Paul is an eyewitness to what he's... So that's what you have to deal with. The best material is there, although we do have sources outside the New Testament.
I guess that's all my time.
Okay. I think the questioner please intervene, so go ahead.
All right. I'm just kind of looking for a little clarification as far as, like, evidence goes. As far as ancient texts...
Who are you directing his question?
Oh, I'm sorry. Dr. Flu, sure. I don't know.
Pick one.
Somebody,
right.
Yeah. I'm just looking for what constitutes some form of ancient text to be considered evidence, because, I mean, it seems like Dr. Habermas has presented some outside sources as being considered outside texts from the New Testament. And specifically, speaking about the resurrection, I would think that an appearance would be made to somebody that was not currently a follower of Jesus at the time. And I would think that Saul of Tarsus would be considered one of those people that appearance would be made to, and such a radical change from his former lifestyle of persecution of the Jesus followers would be some form of, I don't know, some form of evidence to me. But is there any outside sources of somebody from some other people to back up the claim that that Saul was actually not a follower of Jesus before? Because I would think that would be some, I would think that would be a claim from non-believers.
Is your question about the historical nature about Saul of Tarsus, or is your question to Flew about what sort of historical evidence he might count?
Basically, I guess Paul. I'll go with Saul, because okay. I mean that's kind of what I'm having a problem with, is that it seems that Saul has presented his eyewitness account, and then that's not good enough, I guess. And I mean, considering he wasn't a follower, and then all of a sudden changed due to this appearance, I would think that would hold some sway.
I'm not clearly what you're saying, but I think the worthwhile thing to say about this is the evidence of Paul is certainly important and strong, precisely because he was a convert. He was not a prior believer. He was not an apostle. And the evidence that he hadn't been previously a believer is about as clear as it could have been, because he had been an active opponent. I think this has to be accepted as one of the most powerful bits of evidence that there is, precisely because he was converted by his vision, the nature of which I think is obscure,
yeah.
But still,
yeah.
He was effectively converted by this from being an active opponent of the whole Christian movement.
He concedes it as evidence, it's just not convincing.
Just not good enough, okay.
It is striking, though, isn't it, that even someone like Saul is, while not a prior believer, is someone who believes strongly in God.
Right.
So it goes to the other point about rationality.
It's a very worthwhile thing to bring out that the evidence of Paul is the most powerful thing, apart from the fact that he was an outstanding philosophical mind, as the major reformers were also. And
but an appearance to Pontius Pilate would have been cool. Yeah, that would have been very nice.
Yeah, it would be, but I wonder what would that do it? I mean, I remember back in my days when I was searching, I told you I was arguing with Christians and stuff. You'd say, well, if he appeared to Pilate, that would really be neat. Of course, he did appear to James, the brother of Jesus. You know, it's a family skeptic versus an outsider. That's two guys.
Yeah.
But I remember having a little episode where I looked out behind my house, and there was this large tree. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, if God really existed, he could knock that tree down. And I stood and I stared at it and I said, I thought so. And I turned and I walked away. Guess what? That night, there was a storm. And that tree was knocked down, and only that tree. Now, this isn't one of these barefoot through the snow on the way to school stories. I don't go that far back. But I'll tell you what, for a few years, I walked by that tree every day on my way to school, and it never, ever changed my skepticism. So I'm wondering, would that really have done it? No, I think people, I think the
would
will...
It, would it have done what? Convinced
no.
Anthony Flew?
I don't know.
Maybe
I don't
not.
Know if it would have convinced.
Didn't happen to me. It's you who were convinced.
Yeah, but what happened?
Yes. You were convinced by far less.
No, I wasn't. What I mean is the tree meant nothing to me. That night it went down.
No, I know. But you were convinced by the resurrection by less than an appearance to Pontius Pilate. The evidence that you have is enough.
You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see him see the risen Jesus.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask that, actually. But
yes.
His own sense experience.
Yes. And by the way, folks, if you don't know this, he and I have been friends for almost 20 years. We've had a great few days here together, and everything I say teasingly, I say very respectfully to this man. He's a good friend, and I really appreciate him. I just want you to know that.
And they hardly ever come to blows.
I don't think you ought to have been affected by this at all. It's not like that some of the stock cases. There's one in a small town near us where there's a monument recording the case of someone who told a lie in the name of God and was struck dead immediately afterwards. Now, that's the sort of persuasive case that didn't happen with you. God didn't say, you didn't challenge God to do anything to the tree.
You want to be real careful.
And
you
then
you don't tell a lie.
Immediate action. Whereas this did happen in this small town.
Right. I think there's the line for questions. Well, I think
this is to Dr. Habermas. You say that we have to pay attention to the evidence, and there's a lot of historical evidence that Jesus did rise. My question is also, there's a lot of evidence that this century there was a boy found in Tibet who was the 14th reincarnation of Buddha. And there's a lot of evidence for that. So how do we decide which factual evidence
I missed your point. A lot of evidence for what?
That in Tibet there's the 14th reincarnation of the Dalai Lama, and there's a lot of evidence that he passed a lot of tests that he couldn't have passed if he had not been the 14th reincarnation of the 13th Dalai Lama. And there's a lot of evidence that he is the 14th Dalai Lama who was reincarnated. So
what would qualify as evidence for that?
There's a story that the boy ran into a room and pointed in a chest of drawers and said, "My teeth are in there." And the teeth of the 13th Dalai Lama, his false teeth, were in there. They put him through a bunch of other rigorous tests that supposedly...
They're codified tests for
Proving that he is the 13th Dalai Lama. So my question is, if that's also factual evidence, and that would prove a different parallel religious universe, how do you discern which historical evidence to take from?
Good question. So you're talking about something like reincarnation, right?
Yes, I'm just saying
right.
That Paul says
sure.
This, and there's a lot of evidence for that. There's also a lot of evidence for this case, and so how do you discern which one is right?
Let me cite the leading reincarnation expert in the world. His name is Ian Stevenson. He's a medical doctor, a professor at University of Virginia. Your professor here, I think, used to know him or studied there and knows of him. He's published several serious books on reincarnation. And after he looks at all the data, cases like that, people who say, go to this town and make this right-hand turn and make this one, you'll come to this little hut that's like this and like this. And he's got dozens of those stories. When he finished all his data and all his studies, Dr. Stevenson said, there's two theories that account for all the data. This is Dr. Stevenson. One is reincarnation. One is possession. He said they both account for all the data. And he left it there. Now, here's the leading reincarnation expert in the world who gives you a way out that he thinks is just as, that he thinks these two hypotheses can explain all the data. So if you're going to liken that, if that's going to be an analogy for the resurrection, you have to have, it would seem to me, you'd want to have an alternative that explains all the data just as well.
So your view is the Dalai Lama is possessed?
No. I've never met the man. Thankfully, though, I can quote Ian Stevenson, and he's the one who says, the data can be explained either way. And so I think, to me, that's not a close case if there's a if there's an equal hypothesis.
My question is for Dr. Flew. I haven't read any of your books or anything, but I was wondering, you're here tonight kind of basing your argument against Jesus. And I wasn't sure, because I was wondering what made you take the place, the argument against Jesus Christ or the God of Christianity, instead of basing your philosophy against the Buddhist God or a Hindu God, and your motivation for having your argument against the God of Christianity.
Before he answers, I think he's an equal opportunity religious critic, but... I think she was wondering why you directed your. I mean, part of the answer is this is about the resurrection, so there's not much point in criticizing Buddhism for that, right?
Well,
but she's wondering why your focus is, in her view, anti-Christian rather than anti-Hindu, Islam, or something
like
that. But
it's because this was the subject announced for the evening.
Yeah. We tried to stay on that subject, didn't we?
I will indulge myself a little with a remark that the much respected supervisor of my graduate studies once made to me. This was Gilbert Ryle, whose work on the concept of mind some of you may have heard of. And Gilbert once said cheerfully, "Some of my colleagues think I'm prejudiced, but in my opinion, there's nothing that rises in the East except the sun."
Okay, thank you. I guess that's it.
What did you say? I can't hear much of the feeling.
My question is for Dr. Flew. As an atheist, you believe that human beings have no soul, there's no afterlife. When we die, we simply cease to exist, right?
Yes, if I'm asked whether I believe in a future life, I do. But whenever I think of the doctrine of hell and damnation, I'm a little uneasy. I don't regard the future life as... I don't want a future life, thank you very much. And I don't even want a future life of eternal bliss, as it's described in most heavens, because it simply wouldn't appeal to me. But you are asking what I believe, and I'm not being asked to give any reasons for my belief, but... the answer to the question, what I believe, is that, yes. Though my opinion about the ideas of the East is not necessarily the same as my supervisor's.
So you would rather take the chances that if you're right, that anyone who dies, no matter what they believe, there's no consequences, there's no gain, versus the fact that if Christians are right, that they... when they die, they gain eternal bliss with God in heaven, and when you die, there is eternal damnation waiting for you.
I believe he wants to give Pascal's wager.
Pascal's wager.
Oh, yes. You want me to give Pascal's wager? I'm afraid at this time of the evening, I don't feel fit. I have recently written some second thoughts about this, but I can't at the moment remember what they were.
At least he's honest. You're honest.
Wait, is that... That's your answer?
He wants
to know about the... I take it that the question is, you know, all other things being equal, you know, if there's a better payoff for having faith...
Some people may be interested. This is an argument derived from Islam. You know, it was something taken over... by Pascal. I think it arrived in France via, I'm not sure whether the dates were right for that, whether there were still Muslims in the south of Spain at that time.
There were.
It arrived like that. Well, it's a powerful argument, I think. For it to be effective, the idea of a future life has to be granted at the beginning, doesn't it? Because you are betting on the alternative possibilities of a future life in internal torment, which is given to you by the predestinating God of traditional Christianity and Islam. Not exactly what anyone would call a good God in any normal understanding of goodness, but still. For the wager to be an effective challenge, the person who receives the wager has got to regard the hypothesis of a future life as a fairly live hypothesis, don't they? And then they're challenged to take action to ensure that the future life is satisfactory and not the alternative. And the idea of a future life is not one that should be taken as obviously a sound and coherent life, because human beings are creatures of flesh and blood, and what's supposed to be survive? It's supposed to be an immaterial spirit that is in control of the human being. Well, this is not a basic accepted fact. This is a notion held by some people because they've been taught to believe it, and not by everyone. You know, it can't be just taken as we can't be taken to be obviously confronted with two equally reasonable betting options. You know, Pascal has offered a wager as a betting option. I mean, he was in fact a creator of some probability theories in his mathematician's life. This isn't an option like making a bet on who's going to win a race, when there's no doubt that there's going to be the race, and there's no doubt as to who are the participants in the race. It's making a bet between two alternatives, both of which are based, even for their intelligibility, on a speculation. That's the best I can do for the moment.
The pragmatic issues involving pragmatic reasoning in Pascal's wager might be another topic for another panel, perhaps.
Okay,
it's a good question. It's probably not entirely satisfactory to you.
Okay,
you can talk to him later about it.
I just want to finish off by saying, you said that for the consequences, there are human measures that must be taken by the believer themselves. All I wanted to say was that all those measures are simply believing what you don't believe. So it's not like it's a lot of measures.
We're having trouble hearing some of what you're saying up here. But anyway, please make sure you're, as I said before, asking a question and not giving a speech, and then we'll go over here.
My question is for Dr. Flew, and if Jesus didn't resurrect from the dead, then what historically recorded evidence is there for the location of the body, or what happened to the body?
She said, if you don't believe in the resurrection, what happened to the body? Where? And what evidence do you have for another story? Is that fairly?
I don't know. I don't pretend to know. I was starting with a question. Does anyone know? Because I don't think it's we can be in a position to know that the body was deposited in a tomb, though, of course, the reasons of that opponents of the of Christianity wanted to wanted to find a body, didn't they? They wanted to find a body that hadn't risen.
I thought you said earlier, though, that we had enough basis, that those 7-8 reasons I gave that were satisfactory for a burial.
Yeah, I think they probably were satisfactory.
So she wants to know what happened, but if we do have a burial, then what happened to the body?
Well, I suppose what happened to the body when it was buried. Yeah, well.
But I mean, the tomb had to be open within days because it was right in the same city where people could have just taken a scroll, you know, and verified or falsified.
Well, I presume what happened to the body if it was buried. I don't know whether there's a different Christian view. Perhaps there is, and perhaps the view is that the body was resurrected.
That's what Christians believe.
I suppose so, yes.
But she wants to know what you think.
Like, I mean, I guess because what you're saying is you've been asking Dr. Habernas, like, all night to, like, show a historical evidence and, like, documented, like, evidence that the body did resurrect, and he's quoted the Bible and he's quoted other texts and stuff. So is there any text or any, like, person who's actually claimed that the body is or was there after? Like,
I don't think that he disputed that historical evidence. I think his claim was that even if we agree to this, that he didn't think it warranted the belief for him in the resurrection. He doesn't claim to have evidence that shows that the body was taken to Albuquerque or something. You know, he just says, well, look, you know, I know what you're saying. Maybe it's rational for you to believe it, but it doesn't add up for me.
Okay.
I understand the view right.
That's good. Good job. I like the
Albuquerque. Okay. Okay, yes.
My question is for Dr. Habermas. I'm curious, if Jesus claims to be the Son of God and Christians accept that Jesus is the Son of God, in fact, he's the second person of the Trinity, if I'm correct, how miraculous is it really that he rose from the dead? I mean, I think what I'm asking is, as a Christian, should it be regarded as a miracle that the Son of God, or frankly the second person of God, rose from the dead to begin with?
Yeah, I'm not hearing your question.
I didn't either. It's not your fault. There's an amplification.
I heard Son of God and I heard rise from the dead, and I'm not sure.
You could make up an answer.
Yes, you're right. He was the Son of God based on the resurrection. Exactly what I'm saying.
That's your point all along.
That's my point. I think.
Let me try again. Can you hear that? I think my question simply is, for a triunal God in which Jesus is the second person of the Trinity, in fact is part of God, I guess is how you'd say it, how miraculous is it for a Christian for Jesus to rise from the dead, since he is, after all, part of God? Like, shouldn't he be able to do that?
So it's not a miracle, because what do you expect?
This is the Christian naturalistic theory for the resurrection.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I mean, but if you were a person, I think this is the key. If you were in the countryside leaving your shop and going to hear Jesus speak on this, you know, sunny afternoon, and you're hearing him preach, and he's making these extraordinary claims, and these claims aren't computing. I mean, it's not every day that I bump into the Son of God, right? So if this guy claims to be the Son of God, this is rather extraordinary. When they're hearing his claims, they're not Christians. I mean, for the most part, I don't think these people are believing him. They're listening, and they're probably going back to their shop, scratching their heads, thinking, this guy's really getting me thinking. Dr. Flew said today that that Jesus was an incredibly charismatic figure, you know, and people say, oh, this guy's fantastic. Over and over again, the Gospels say he spoke as somebody who had wisdom, not as one of the religious leaders they'd heard. So they were impressed with him. But nonetheless, I think they're going back to the shop, scratching their head, saying, I don't know what to make of this guy. But it seems to me that when somebody comes to the shop a few months later and says, hey, did you hear that? The Galilean is dead. He says, no way. Yeah, the Romans killed him. Oh, man, you know, what can I do with that? You go back to work in your shop. somebody 2 weeks later says, hey, did you hear the Galilean that you went to hear speak who's dead? He's been raised from the dead, and there's this big fisherman named Peter, and he's coming to town today, and I think we should go hear him speak. What I mean is, this story was put together by bits and pieces. I think they were every bit as skeptical when they first heard it. But what closed the argument for them, those who believe, what closed the argument for them was the resurrection. Then it makes sense. Yeah. I don't think it makes sense to them until they get all the puzzle pieces put together. And the resurrection is what put all the puzzle pieces together. I think that's the Christian position. That answers your question, I'm not sure. But anyway, I still like your view.
Okay, my question is directed to Gary Habermas. And my question is, you guys talked a little bit about the idea of having tangible evidence of the resurrection, like the video camera. But my question is, if God does exist, wouldn't he provide some kind of tangible evidence so we wouldn't have to have this argument in the first place? And then also, in addition to that, if I believe correctly, a major idea of Christianity is this idea of faith. And doesn't the idea of having to have the resurrection occur sort of contradict that idea of having faith in God at the same time?
Okay, now, I understand the faith part, but the first part of your question?
The first part of my question was, if God exists, wouldn't he provide some tangible evidence?
Sure. I mean, he doesn't have to, but if God exists, I would think providing tangible evidence is one very important way he could act. And so when they see that in history, they think, wow, he's acted. I mean, that's precisely what they think. Now, as far as your faith, I figured when you go to universities or, I mean, any kind of forum, sooner or later somebody asks that question. And I think it's a great question. But maybe I'm not reading your view correctly, but I'm hearing something like this. Isn't Christianity about faith? And you're sitting up here talking about evidence all night. How do you relate faith and evidence together? Is that sort of the...
Well, I mean, I'm talking specifically about the resurrection, and you mentioned several times in your argument that a purpose of the resurrection was to show that Jesus was the Son of God, and
right.
you mentioned it just now for the little farmer out, you know, in the countryside. It was used as evidence
right.
that he existed, but doesn't that contradict the idea of having faith in God?
Yeah, no, to me... Okay, let me give you an example. You date somebody, and after a while, you think you know this person better than anybody else on the face of the earth. You're still not married unless you say I do. You perhaps know them better than anybody on the face of the earth, but you still say I do. I think that's a similar analogy to Christianity. When people come to Christ, they're saying I do to Jesus. I don't think there's any conflict between my knowing somebody and thinking, you know what, you're the kind of person I'd like to spend the rest of my life with, but realizing it takes a commitment. Now, don't I know that half the marriages in this country break up? Don't I know that this person might not be what they see? You know, there's all kinds of objections, but I say, no, I know you better than anybody else, and let's do it. That's my side. Would you marry me, you know? I think it's very similar. Just because you have all your ducks in a row doesn't mean there's nothing disturbing these things. You can still have issues, you know, and obviously the fact of what happens to marriages shows there's issues. So I think you try to be real careful, you try to line your data up, and you decide if, for your 2 cents, if you want to say I do. And that I do, that step, that faith, that commitment, is not contradicted by the fact that you have all your ducks in a row. In fact, we say it's the opposite. We say it's a person who has everything lined up, who takes a step, who's smarter than the person who knows somebody for 2 weeks and does something. So I don't think there's any conflict whatsoever between evidence and faith.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm told that time is running short, so one or two more questions, Michael says. And what he says goes, so you're good.
Okay, the disciples were all Jews with Jewish teaching, and isn't it Jewish belief that the Messiah would have been an earthly Messiah, someone to set up a kind of a worldly kingdom? And it is, to my knowledge, that the idea of a resurrection was never taught in the Old Testament. So what short of a resurrection would give the disciples the idea? And this kind of goes along with the hallucinization theory.
Who is your question directed to?
Sorry, towards Dr. Flew.
I didn't even hear the answer to that. You know, see, the speakers are, maybe you can hear it, but they're not pointed at us.
Okay, how's that now? Okay, do you want me to repeat it?
To us.
Okay, the 12 disciples were all Jewish, and with Jewish teaching, obviously. isn't it Jewish belief that the Messiah would be an earthly king? And if it is to my knowledge that the idea of a resurrection was never taught in the Old Testament, so what short of the resurrection would give the disciples that idea, and this kind of coincides with the hallucinization theory towards Dr. Flew?
I heard about half of it. I'll take a shot at the half I heard, the part about the kingdom and the Jewish view. I think you're right. The Jewish view is that a king is coming who sets a kingdom up, and he sets it up on behalf of the God of the universe. Interestingly enough, in Daniel chapter 7, 13 and 14, this person is called one like a son of man. And the son of man is not what Christians call God the Father, because in the same context you have this person called the Ancient of Days. But the son of man is sent to earth to set up the kingdom. And very interestingly, that was Jesus' favorite self-designation. He called himself the son of man more than any other title. And there's a lot of stuff here I'm not saying. But personally, I think Son of Man, who the Son of Man is, comes very close to who the Son of God is. I think they're two trips down the same path. Or I should say, two trips down parallel paths, let's put it that way. And maybe that didn't help you. But I'm saying, yes, the disciples did have that view, and they thought Jesus was fulfilling that. They thought that he initiated the kingdom in his preaching. And you might say the resurrection initiates stage two, if you want to put it that way.
I think there was another part about the... shared hallucination thing. But if you don't mind, since there are a couple other people, I'd like to try to get as many as we can.
Yeah, I didn't hear that part at all.
Go ahead, sir.
Can you hear me first?
So far.
Okay.
we don't hear anything we don't want to hear. So
selective. Okay. Sort of going in the same vein with, like, video evidence. Video is pretty good evidence versus written evidence. It seems like as our ability to provide... maybe more authentic proof, such as video proof, might be better than somebody saying, I saw somebody throw a football and it looked like he got a touchdown or whatever. It seems to me like there's less and less evidence as time advances. Like, the Bible has a whole collection of evidence if somebody accepts that. But as we've had better means to document it, such as audio recording recently and video, there should be some evidence that we could say, here's an audio recording or here's a video recording. It's pretty hard to refute this. Here's some good evidence. And so do you think it's sort of a coincidence that we haven't seen more evidence, since it'd be even easier to record a whole lot of evidence rather than get some special people to write it, such as with the Bible? Sorry, this is getting
or perhaps
really confusing.
As an alternative, if the resurrection happened now and we caught it on...
That'd
MTV.
That'd be neat. Again, I got those tapes in the back.
Well,
that'd be neat. But this may not be going anywhere, what you're saying, but for good or for ill, we're dealing with an ancient historical event. And in ancient history, we can only deal with the tools we have. And let me give you an example. We say today, we use the phrase Julius Caesar crossing the Rubicon. And we say that like that's a real sure event. There are two sources in the ancient world for Julius Caesar crossing the Rubicon, and one takes from the other one. So we've got one. So when you have multiple sources for something, that increases... I mean, obviously we don't have a video camera, but what you do have, you have to deal with the data you do have, and that's what ancient history is based on. No one's going to throw ancient history out the window, so you deal with what you have. That's a short. I don't know what that sign means, except it says stop.
There's a sign that says stop there. So... we've been cued that's the official end, and so Mike Swanson is going to make some closing remarks.
Thanks, Dr. Lynch, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Habermas and Dr. Flew, for coming out. We appreciate it.
For more information about the Veritas Forum, including additional recordings and a calendar of upcoming events, please visit our website at www.veritas.org.